Alright, the topic for this evening is, excuse me. What is that topic? Oh, creating a nurturing home environment and sanctuary for our children, otherwise known as cosmic nutrition. Is that for a long-winded title? And these are our autumn songs this year. Those of you who know them, sing along. Golden in the garden, golden in the glen, golden, 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 Prince Autumn's here again. Come little leaves, said the wind one day, come over the meadow to dance and to play. Put on your dresses of red and gold. Summer is gone and the days grow cold. Soon as the leaves heard the wind's loud call, down they came fluttering warm and bold. Dancing and twirling the little leaves went. Winter was coming and they were content. Soon fast asleep in their earthy beds, the snow made a cover that covered their heads. And then the little leaves tumble, the little leaves play, the little leaves twirl around on this fine autumn day. That's that little cat. Meow, meow, said the little black cat, and his tail stood up just like that. He hissed, hiss, and he ran. It was such a sight. He was telling all the children it will soon be Halloween night. Halloween, there's witches in the air. Have you seen their shadows everywhere? Oh, beware, don't you dare. They might pull your hair. Last but not least, five little pumpkins sitting on a gate. The first one said, oh my, it's getting late. The second one said, let's have some fun. The third one said, let's run and run and run. The fourth one said, there's witches in the air. The fifth one said, but I don't care. When whoosh went the wind and out went the lights, and away rolled the pumpkins on Halloween night. Good. All right. I'm going to start with that verse that you have there. This is a verse Ned Steiner gave to do with children. And I did it with my children until they don't want me to come into their bedroom anymore. Quite a long time. From my head to my feet, I am the picture of God. From my heart into my hands, I feel God's living breath. When I speak with my mouth, I follow God's own will. When I gaze upon God and father and mother, in all dear people, in beast and flower, in tree and stone, no fear can come near, only love for all that's around me here. Blessings on my day and night. Good. Well, you notice how that verse says, no fear can come near. This is a fearful time of the year for the children because the days are getting darker and there's so many more shadows, and they live in that kind of magic space where they see other things that we don't see. So this verse really empowers them. And usually with children, when they're fearful, I talk to them a lot about angels and fairies and gnomes and how they protect them and how they can call on them. And I actually learned that as a child because I was an insomniac. And if I left my closet door open, there were all kinds of things in there. And I just started talking to angels, and they would come and help me go to sleep. So it really does help the children. And when they get their little cells hurt, little Lorna, that one day, I just said to her, you know, the little angels will come and knit it up, just so. And it'll be all healed. And her little crying and everything stopped. And she, because that's a fairly, a place that they naturally relate to without much effort, especially children now. Steiner spoke about us moving into a new age of light. We went, moved out of Kali Yuga in, I think it's 1899, something like that, 1889. Kali Yuga being a long era of dark, this millenniums of dark, the dark ages and that. Now we've come into the light. And we're just at the beginning of light, but that human beings would come and be born with more faculties over time of living in the light and seeing spiritual realities. And so I believe that children really live naturally in that place, and that they come into the right kind of circumstances. And some children, no matter what, continue to manifest that kind of reality that's so true to them. And then he also said that a lot of people in insane asylums actually had spiritual vision, and that we didn't understand how their reality was more in tune with spiritual realities. Mm-hmm. So that's an interesting little side. And I don't know why I went off on that little sidebar there. But anyway, in the last month when I spoke about how the children come out of the spiritual world, and that this isn't, generally speaking, their first incarnation. Some of us are older souls than others, and some younger souls have experienced more or less lives on earth. But the main key there is that they've come out of the spiritual world, and that we look at the human being as a spiritual being, or having spiritual roots with a light that shines inside. And our whole modern age looks at the human being as a machine. The brain is like a computer, or as an animal, that we're just a refined animal, a little bit smarter than your average animal. And when a human being, particularly children, are taught that kind of concept, the concepts that live so strongly in materialistic reality, it's sort of demoralizing to them in a certain way, and it doesn't hold a very high bar if all you're expected to do is be a machine or a soul of an animal. And Steiner cautioned us that if we didn't begin to educate the children differently, that they would become mechanized in their thinking and animalistic in their soul life. Mm-hmm. And I think that if you look at some of the troubles in the world, and some of the manifestations of the troubles that we're having, you're seeing mechanization, mm-hmm, and animalization of the human being. So just that little thing of, you know, regarding them as spiritual beings is so important to children. And they look at you, and they have a very deep sense of who you are in your being, both in many, many ways. First of all, as a tiny baby, you can see they're not really looking directly at you. They're looking around you. They're looking at all of those finer bodies and the beings that live around you. But you also give yourself away in a very great way by the way that you move and the tone of your voice. And you just reveal who you are and your deep inner being, and you reveal what kinds of thoughts you have, how you regard the world, how you regard yourself. And they're looking for wisdom in life. So they may or may not regard adults respectfully, because they can more or less see right through you. So that puts us in a little bit of a precarious situation. As an adult, you can't fake it too much with a young child. But going back to that idea of all of us being spiritual beings, to me it really rang true when I started to think of my home and creating my home and the environment around my home as a place where spiritual beings live, that I was creating a sanctuary for them. Of course, it's a dirty net sanctuary and messy and all that too. But the fact that as you're doing it, the attitude that you have and the beliefs that you have about your life as you create your home creates an environment that the children can thrive in if you realize that you're doing it for spiritual beings, your own little holy family, in a sense. So, in the word, in this one chart back there, the one that says cosmic nutrition at the top, there's the word hearth underneath that. And in times past, the hearth was the center of the family, of the family home. It was the whole life and vitality of the home, the fireplace. Now the center of the home is a microwave oven and or the refrigerator. And it's a very different kind of approach that we take to modern life that doesn't necessarily help children thrive. But the word hearth in itself has the words, if you look, it has heart in it, it has art, it has ear, it has hear, and it has earth. And so if you begin to think of your home really as a hearth, a place where you bring warmth, and that it is a sanctuary that you come to every day to nurture yourselves and to rejuvenate and to be protected from everything around you, the influences around you, that's the beginning of looking at how to create a healthy environment for the children. So I'm going to jump around just a slight bit on these charts. The very first page is that funny little person that I draw. the one that says physical in the middle. And some of you have been over this before, but it never gets old, really. And as you begin to, if you've been through hearing this before, and you just keep thinking about it, sooner or later, perceptions come to you about what these bodies are. So there's the physical body that is born, obviously, at birth. But those aren't the only bodies that we have. There are what Steiner referred to as supersensible bodies, those that you do not see with your eyes, but that you can perceive. And his whole part of his teaching was to develop the capacity in yourself to perceive those other finer bodies. There are books that he showed very specifically how to develop that capacity. So the first body outside of the physical body is called the etheric or the life force. That is the spiritual, supersensible body that gives our physical body life. Our physical body is a mineral substance on its own at death. When the etheric body has left, there's only mineral substance left. And the life body is busy during that first 7 years from birth to approximately 7 years of age, school year, or entering school age. That life force body is very, very actively involved in finishing the physical body. In the same way that when a baby is born, they come out of the womb, but they still have another trimester, a fourth trimester after birth in the first 3 months or so, in which you need to create sort of a womb-like circumstance for them because they've come out of a very protected and amazingly life-filled body into a reality that's startling to them. So those first 3 months, you have a circumstance that is more womb-like, the swaddling, the quiet, not so many lights and so on. But in that same way that the time in utero is not finished when the child is born. The physical body, the organs are not finished. They don't function in the way that an adult's organs function. The heart obviously beats at a different rate. They breathe at a different rate. All the organs are there in their general form, but the way that they function isn't complete. And that it goes on beyond the school age time. The eyes are not mature till somewhere between 8 and 10 years old, as are the ears. And so this vitality and life force really needs to be working on the physical body. That is its main job. And if you think of it, you have a whole life. So you really want your child to have the most health that they can. And this life force body, at the time of the school's beginning, which is when the first or the permanent teeth come through, that's a sign that this life force has been freed up from the formation of the organs, and then it is freed for a different activity, namely the soul activity that allows them to develop their memory in a different way than they have in the first 7 years. In the first 7 years, the memory is more place-based, so when they go somewhere and they go back there, they remember it. Or you say lilac bush, and I remember my grandparents' yard. Or, you know, it's the place-based memory. But beginning at school age, when the teeth come out, the life force is freed so that they can begin to remember letters and so on in a way that's not detrimental to their physical health. When they're introduced very deliberately, obviously children are interested in the world and they pick up letters and they pick up everything around them, but it's different than trying to teach them. And it's different than demanding that their memory work to remember the letters. So when you wait until this life force is freed, you've actually allowed the body to finish its work so that it's an appropriate vehicle for the academics, which is the major, the only reason that we don't teach it in Steiner-Waldorf schools until school age. Because Steiner looked at the human being in a way that he could see what would ultimately bring health all the way through life. How you could work with a human being in a way that they would be filled with life and vitality in old age was something that he was really quite concerned about, because he saw in his time that the health of the human being was declining. He predicted that fertility rates would increase over time because of many of our practices, one of them being education, another being the way that we raise our food, and so on. And he predicted that the hardening illnesses would increase, hardening illnesses like cancers, like heart disease, like Alzheimer's, like Huntington's, like multiple sclerosis, that those kind of illnesses would increase if we continued to only educate the head rather than taking the whole human being into consideration. That we needed to realize that human being is head, heart, and hand, the hand being the manifestation of the physical body, and that this education of the physical body was a very important task, and in many ways a primary one, really taking precedence over the education of the other bodies in a certain way if you wanted to have health and vitality in your life. And I've met older people who were educated in Waldorf schools, who pursued anthroposophy in their life, and they were so, had such a youthfulness in them. Mm-hmm. There was just a little spark of, you could see the vitality and the way that they thought and the way that they were. So, and I, you know, well, I should do my little disclaimer here. Don't believe a word of what I say. Take it into your own life and see whether it rings true. But if you watch your child when they're very young, you can see that they have a lot of vitality. And then if you start to look at children who are being prematurely educated and what I call prematurely aging them, which I find quite ironic that our whole culture wants to prematurely age you at one end of the spectrum and stay a child at the other when you need to grow up. So it's like we have it backwards. And one Waldorf educator, Eugene Schwartz, said that he thought that if we allowed children to be children when they were children, that we wouldn't have to go back to learning how to find our inner child when we were adults, but that inner child stayed with you. So this education of a physical body, and then this birth of the etheric at approximately school age. Last month we went through the planetary influences that brought about these births. Those births keep going on, and I'm not going to go into them at all tonight, or we won't be able to cover what you would be most beneficial for you to hear about the children. But there's another birth at around 14 years of age. That's the astral birth. That's when the reproductive system, approximately, with our premature aging, menstruation is beginning earlier. All the children, not all, but most, are maturing earlier. And there was research done in Europe on Waldorf students. They mature more slowly. They, on the whole, they haven't their onset of puberty hasn't gone back, hasn't gone into the younger ages. And it's because of the way they're educated. But amongst other things, there's the hormones and the animals, et cetera. There's all many, many different factors, but that's one major one. So this birth of the astral body, the birth of the reproduction system, is when true thinking, that is reasoning and cause and effect thinking, begins to take place. And that's because the forces that are used in the reproductive system are freed up from the reproductive system to allow us to think cause and effect, and to think reasonably, in a reasoned fashion, to think conceptually before that age. And all of this you can teach children to do more young. You can expose them to it, and you can do all kinds of things. In our time, there's so many different parent ideas about parenting, and people are doing, you know, they think if you don't teach them how to read by the time they're three, how will the little genius get the best job in the world, and so on. In fact, it really works against them. And you all know that Einstein said if we continued to think the way we were, that we do think, we would never solve life's problems, the issues, the current, the great social issues of our time, if we continue to use the kind of thinking that we use and that's promoted in our time. So, yeah, that's that little chart. And the one reason I wanted to introduce you and to bring this chart up again is because in this creation of the home life that is brings the greatest life and vitality to the children, this etheric body, which hasn't been birthed yet, it doesn't mean that it's not there. It's more hovering around them. And it is what gives children their perceptibility, their ability to look at a plant, to see the fairies, to see the gnomes, to see forms, to be so completely taken with the littlest bug. It isn't just because it's a bug the way we see it, it's because they see a greater reality that it's so fascinating to them, and so that they can just stop their whole world. So this etheric life body has to be nurtured in a special way to help this healthfulness continue and to be developed. Children are born more or less healthy. Not all children are born healthy, and not all children are born with healthy etheric bodies. The look of a child who has a very healthy etheric body is round and rosy, and their gaze is very dreamy. And that is not the description of most children of our time. Go to Blockbuster sometime and see the little children right there. They're not round and rosy. And their gaze is not one of dreaminess and living into the deep spiritual realities that are so beneficial to them. So this etheric body lives into their sense perceptions in a way that ours don't anymore. They did when we were young, but they don't. In a way, the practices that Steiner teaches to become perceptible of the spiritual and supersensible realities takes you back to that kind of perceptions, reawakens something that had to be cut off, he says, because we have gone through this period of darkness, this period of growing more and more into a materialistic concept of life, so that we could, in freedom, come back to choosing spiritual realities and honoring our spiritual beings. And before the age of Kali Yuga, we had spiritual perception. People lived very intuitively. They ate intuitively. They just knew, because they had deep relationships with spiritual beings. But that there was kind of a curtain drawn over that kind of consciousness. And drawing that curtain gives us the possibility to choose and freedom to reconnect to our spiritual being and to choose a spiritual life. As I said last time, and I'm not going to go too far on that, that our whole mission in this life is love and peace. And it is out of freedom that we have to choose love and peace. And it's out of learning how to perceive the spirit and work with the spiritual and soul life that we will be able to truly manifest love and peace. It isn't some abstract kind of feeling or perception. It's quality, it's a capacity in ourselves that we have to develop in order to do that in the world. So the child's senses are based on the fact that their etheric body hovers in the world around them. That has also been described as them being like little sponges. In other words, they just take everything in, and they have nothing to guard or stop them from what's coming into them. We can stop things. It can be noisy out there, and we can just shut that noise out and focus on what we need to focus and do what we need to do. There are many ways that we can shut things out, because we have this birth of the higher self that can protect us. They don't have that. Their higher self at this point is us, and the protection that we offer them in life. So their little etheric senses are out there sensing the whole world. And you can imagine how overwhelming it must be to live in our time. And Boulder, it's less overstimulating than many places in the world. But yet, there are many things that are overstimulating to a child. Their nervous system is not completely formed. Their nerves do not have all the fatty sheaths called myelin that help to protect them. So they're very vulnerable to being overstimulated. And, you know, when your child falls apart at the end of the day and they go through their tantrums and so on, and they're just at the end of the limit, they're showing you that their nerves have had it. They're shot for the day. They need rest. They need time to recharge and to build up the myelin sheaths again. So I wanted to look at the next chart, which is I don't know where in your order it is, but it's called the 12 senses chart. And these are the senses. These are the 12 basic senses that Steiner spoke about. He alluded to others beyond these, and that we would be able to develop over time other senses than these, but these are the 12 basic ones that we work on right now in the way that we live in our physical body. So the very first one is the sense of touch. These first, the four top senses are called the lower senses or the willing senses. They are the senses that are the most the ones that a young child focuses on the most in their development. It isn't to say that they don't smell, taste, see, and perceive warmth, and so on, but these are the four that need to be developed in order for them to thrive. They are physical senses. They give you a sense of perception of your own body. Waldorf education is also called a yoga of the senses and a body-based learning. In other words, if a child gets into its body in a very healthy way where it perceives its body in relationship to others, in relationship to space, and feels confident in their body, they have a sound basis for learning. So this sense of touch is the most primal one. That one is very activated at birth and before birth, but particularly when the child comes through the birth canal, there's this very intense sense of touch that gets activated. When a child is born cesarean, for instance, that sense of touch can be underdeveloped. When it goes through the birth canal, there are many biochemical processes that are activated so that the sense of touch begins to develop in a certain way. When they experience cesarean, they don't have that kind of experience, and you have to work with them in a way that touch begins to be more developed. I had one of my children by cesarean, and I could see how it was very different for him. So the sense of touch, what's the organ for the sense of touch? It's your skin, the largest organ in the body. Very perceptive and very permeable. And so when you're putting things on your children, they're really absorbing very quickly. It goes right directly in. You need to be really cautious these days of what you put on your children. This is where I could start ranting and raving a little bit. But our government does not protect us from damaging chemicals, and don't think that they do. It is all about making money now. And so when you're putting body products on your child, you need to be very cautious. Their little organs are very susceptible. They're very sensitive. Thus, we have many allergies. We have asthma. Children have illnesses and diseases that they never had before because they're overexposed to chemicals that are quite damaging. So that's one of the things about the sense of touch. And all of this is amplified the younger they are. So I'll just start with when they're really young. And here comes a really young one. So I was just going into the sense of touch of a young child, and I just went through the fact that if they don't go through the birth canal, they haven't had that sense of touch. You can only imagine how intense that sense of touch is. You probably have never had a total body massage like birth. When that doesn't happen, that biochemical processes don't take place. So I'm talking about touch and how the younger they are, the more you need to be really conscious of how you are touching them and that it has lots of love involved with it. Because their skin is their largest organ, they're very perceptive. They're very perceptive to who and how you are. And I also said that you need to be very careful about what products you're putting on them. Because if you research it, many of the ingredients in body care products are totally carcinogenic. They're horrible, and it's very disgusting that our culture tolerates this. And children are more susceptible than we are. So that's two factors. The other is that there is a sense of touch that perceives light touch, and there's a sense of touch that perceives deep touch. Almost every human being, and especially cesarean children, have a strong prefer one kind of touch over the other touch. So there are children that if you just barely touch them, they flinch and they move away from you. And there are other children who can't get enough of deep touch. So they're the little boys who are constantly running into each other and running into the wall. And it's touch, touch, touch. Where am I? That's what your sense of touch gives you. It's a sense of self. This is who I am. This is where my boundary stops and your boundary begins. When you have a well-developed sense of touch, you also can have an ability to perceive the other human being more accurately. And so there is something called sensory issues, in which children need to do sensory integration. Their touch, sense of touch, also called the tactile sense, has been interfered with so much that in a classroom, they cannot tolerate it without banging against things, without certain behaviors that are very disruptive, because their sense of touch never really was activated and worked with in a way that helped them to settle into themselves and to feel, I'm in my body, you're out there, and I can deal with this. And when your sense of touch is not well developed, you have a very a disturbed sense of self. You really do not feel good about yourself. And there's lots of children like that in our culture. I'm not sure about other cultures, but in our culture, there are a lot of children who have tactile disturbances. On that, the page with the cosmic thing, the tactile, I just listed some of the things that are helpful for the sense of touch. Regular massage, being conscious of your thoughts and feelings. It's part of that, Chris. Probably on page 2. Exposed to deep and light touch. Avoid excessive tickling. They feel very powerless and very overwhelmed if they're tickled a lot and it's not comfortable to them. And then paying attention to the kinds of materials that are in your environment. Toys and clothing that are made of natural substances, cotton, wool, linen, silk, etc., have more of a sense of life and vitality in them, and they nurture the child's sense of life and vitality more. The other substances, plastics and polyesters, etc., create a disturbance in the ions around the child, a disturbance in the electrical field around them that's not beneficial to their life force, their sense of vitality. And you guys will have to listen to the beginning of the tape when I spoke about the life force in the etheric body. And children who have tactile issues, and sometimes the tactile issue isn't a sensory issue, it's a constitutional issue. That's me, I'm the princess on the pea bed, you know, the pea at the bottom of the bed. Every little thing I can feel on my skin. So there are children who are thin-skinned and can feel everything. They don't like the labels in the backs of their clothing. They don't like to wear clothing. And in our climate, it's really hard because it can go anywhere from 30 to 80 in one day. And they get used to not being clothed. And then if they have sensitivities in their skin, they don't want to wear appropriate clothing. And I'll go into that more, but they need to be worked with so that they're wearing clothing that keeps them nice and warm. The next sense on the chart is the sense of life. The sense of life, and a little baby shows it so well when their sense of life is disturbed. It has to do with, are they hungry? Have they slept well? Is everything in their body feeling well? It's a sense of wellness. The sense of life is on the chart, you can see. There's that one. You have to watch out for the electromagnetic fields around children. Some children are so sensitive to them that they don't sleep well. Some human beings are. And the keys are healthy nutrition, sleep, and rhythm. Some children are very, very sensitive to whether they feel well. And when their body goes off just a little bit, they're very upset, even as they're older, not just infants. And so when you have a child who has that sense of life exaggerated, you have to work with them very carefully that all their conditions and their environment help them to feel well. Intellectualization works against their sense of life in a great way because it robs them of life force. So I think the sense of life is, you know, you can feel what that's about in a great deal. And what I haven't said to you is that these lower senses then become the basis for the higher senses. The bodily organs of the lower senses become the basis for what are called the higher senses. The higher senses give us the sense of the other being. They're called spiritual and social senses. So the sense of touch becomes the basis for perceiving what the ego of the other being is. The sense of life becomes the sense of thought, so that if you look at the higher senses and start with the hearing, a child hears, a baby hears, but they don't, they have no concept of language in the beginning or concept of thought. They're more perceiving you and how you feel and what you think towards them and what your state of being is, rather than what your language is or what kinds of thoughts you're trying to give to them. So the life becomes a sense of thought. The sense of movement, which I haven't explained yet, becomes a sense of language. And the sense of balance becomes a sense for hearing. So let me go over the lower senses a little more, but I just wanted to point out to you that when there's a disturbance of the four lower senses, there's a disturbance in your ability to be a social being. And that's what you see in a great way in our time. All you have to do is pick up a newspaper and read about what goes on in schools and just what goes on in our culture. Worldwide, there's a deep disturbance of our social senses, and it goes back to these four lower senses not being appropriately developed and allowed to develop in a slow and deliberate way. An animal develops very, very quickly. Most animals can do everything they need in the first 12 hours. They can stand, they can eat. They can do everything they need to survive. A human being thrives on the principle of slow maturation. And once again, our whole society is about grow them up quickly. Just, come on, let's get them up to be adults, rather than just letting them develop, like we said last time, as a rose that's allowed to open, rather than having the petals just pried open. So going down this chart, the sense of movement. Now, you can see that your children are in constant movement. When they're not allowed to move, they're not happy. It is the being of a child to move. When they're very, very young, if you ever sit down and try to do what an infant does, you're completely exhausted in about a half hour. It doesn't take long. And all that movement is about organizing yourself. It's about coming to terms with my hands here, that's there. It's about coming to terms with having the nerve pathways developed from your limbs and your appendages all the way up to your brain so that you can perceive where you are in space and how you are in relationship to other beings and other objects. So movement tells you a great deal about yourself. It also gives you a great sense of freedom when you are allowed to move appropriately as when you're young. And so I think it becomes apparent that movement is a disturbed sense in our time, because if your child's doing lots of media, they're not moving. If they're in a plane a lot, they're not moving. They're being moved, but they're not moving. If they're in a car a lot, they're being moved. They're not moving. Well, our children have to do these things. It's the culture we live in. But you have to take it into consideration for them that they, you know, if you're traveling, you stop and you let them move and get them out and let them run around and move and invigorate that sense. Let's see what we say in the chart about movement. Balance and movement in modern occupational therapy way is they're put together. In Steiner's sense, they're two completely different. They're related, but they're different senses. So the sense of movement and balance are together in the chart. You need to provide wholesome and healthy movement for your child every day. The greater part of the day. If you have to go shopping, fine, but let them move a lot during the day. And when they're done with the shopping, let them move again. You'll have a much happier child if they can move a lot. Another key thing is allowing their achievement at their own pace without assistance. So in our modern world, we think that to help the child, you lift them up to the monkey bars. But it doesn't help them to develop their sense of movement. It doesn't help them in developing their muscles and their ligaments and their tendons so that they're strong enough to do that. So that they have, of themselves, achieved physically what they need to do in order to do that movement. And when they have achieved it out of their own, they're not going to hurt themselves because they have the physical organism that perceives movement in a way that keeps them from being hurt. When they're put up on bars or put up in, if you put them up in a tree, they're going to fall higher than they're ready. They're going to fall a greater distance than they physically have mastered. If they climb that tree themselves, they're only going to climb as far as they can master and as far as they can handle in terms of hurting themselves. I used to always say to my parents, let them hurt themselves a lot when they're little and they won't hurt themselves when they're older. Because they develop this perceptibility in their body about where they are in space. Their sense of movement becomes so refined that they can do incredible physical things. But if you've done too much for them, their physical body hasn't been developed. Their capacity to perceive their own movement has been interfered with. So it's a really good thing to learn with children, just observing them, just seeing what they can do. Rather than doing for them, it also helps to develop a strong will because the act of doing develops your movement.
I'm so sorry.
We'll just move for a while. We adults don't have the same need for movement, by the way.
Speak for yourself.
Speak for yourself, yeah, it's true. I don't sit very still that often. Just observing them is a really great thing to learn. You learn so much about your child by just watching them. And I'm observing in a deeper sense than just, what do your eyes see? What do you smell? What do you hear? What do you taste? All those things. You learn a lot. They reveal themselves and who they are by observing them. So I said the one about minor accidents. Encourage rolling, swinging, rocking, and climbing. Now this is getting into the sense of balance. The organ for the sense of balance is the inner ear. The organs for the sense of movement are your muscles, tendons, and ligaments. And they work together. They're not separate at all. They work together in a very fine way. The inner ear has these three little semicircular canals. They tell you whether your body is in where its left and right space is, where it's above the horizontal midline, above and below that, and where the before and the behind is. and the sense of balance is very interfered with in our time by all our modern wonderful achievements. The planes, the cars, the baby devices, the little walkers used to be really popular, and all of those things. They need to move themselves in order to perceive where it is. It's also interfered with by diet. If you have a diet that unknowingly, usually, has some kind of allergen in it, your inner ear fills up with fluids, and children have an inner ear, the canal is more horizontal, so it doesn't drain the fluids easily. So children get earaches more easily, their ears fill with fluid more easily, which interferes with this sense of balance. And the sense of balance is developed and calmed and soothed by rocking, and as they move towards 2 years old, between 2 and 3 and on up, spinning. The children, when they come here, you notice how they love to get on the swing? That soothes them. That's very soothing after coming in a car. For us, it's different because we're older. We cannot spin and twirl and do all the things that they can do. But for them, it's soothing because it helps them get back into a sense of security. I'm in my body. I'm here. And so you want to provide that rolling, swinging, rocking, climbing, all that physical activity. And avoid unnecessary auto and air travel. You can't always avoid it, but know when the child gets out of the plane, they need a lot of movement. It's going to take time for them to get back to where this inner ear is working the way it needs to. And avoiding acceleration of physical skills. It goes back, like early sports, it goes back to allowing the muscles and tendons and ligaments to develop in their own time. You have to have, in order to play soccer, for instance, you have to have a certain range of development in your muscles, ligaments, and tendons. And young children are so susceptible to having knee injuries and so on by the sports because their bodies aren't quite ready. Their bones aren't hard enough. Nothing is quite hard enough to play sports in a true fashion. Kicking a ball around is fine, hitting a ball. But when you get into the intense sports where they just do it so repetitively, their bodies aren't quite ready for it. Not to mention that their soul life isn't really ready either for the kind of competition that you have to face when you're playing sports. So little children fall apart when they're not the first, the best, and so on. So they don't have the constitution yet to take that kind of soul demand.
What about, my daughter's 4 and a half and she's starting to ask, can I go to gymnastics? Can I go to ballet?
Well, gymnastics is a little bit different. You're not going to get her into competitive gymnastics.
No, but, for me it's, do I want to be in those places? Frankly, for me it's like an aesthetic thing, but I also, I don't see a lot of incredibly sensitive people teaching those classes. I mean, it's just something for people to take their kids to. So I don't know. I mean, it's not like I'm taking her to, take her to.
Well, on the whole, I don't think children need lessons and this and the other. They don't need to be awakened.
Yeah.
They just need to be living and doing what you do in life rather than being focused on your learning this activity.
Yeah. I mean, swimming is one thing just because I think it's a safety issue, partly.
And there are children that I would say should do gymnastics for the development of the inner ear and the sense of movement and so on. But Marcella's not one of them.
Okay. I'm off the hook. Thank you. I'll blame it all on you.
And it also creates another stressor in your life. You got to be at the lesson at this time, and everybody's. We're all already stressed over our schedules. I don't know why you would want to add another one in. But on the other hand, you know, she can be around little kids doing it and turning somersaults.
Oh, yeah.
Learning how to, just on their own, they can learn all of those things. Mm-hmm. And she may or may not have told you, but we do our little gymnastics here.
Mm-hmm. Well, we do it, in, you know, at home. We have balls and we mm-hmm. do, you know, she does flips and stuff.
Yeah.
But, no. You know, just don't want to feel like I'm depriving her.
Right. All right, so on that's the four lower senses that gives you yourself, your sense of self in your body. And then you move into the four middle senses, also called the senses of feeling, and that gives you the sense of the world around you. Smell. Now, children don't necessarily know that they smell things. There are many children who aren't conscious at all that they smell things, and there are other children who, you know, they're so sensitive to smell. The main thing I would say about smell is, well, first of all, it's a very primal sense. And anything you smell goes immediately to your hypothalamus, and it's a very deep memory. Most of our very earliest memories are associated with smells. And I think it's important that they not be exposed to chemical smells, because those smells go directly to the brain. They are substances that go directly to the brain. And I don't think there are a lot of sprays and things that are not beneficial to the human being. Like I said before, don't think that our government is protecting you from hazardous chemicals. They're not. So it requires us to just be ever more conscious. And it's a very tiring thing, but you know, reading labels and knowing what is in products. So the sense of smell, natural fragrances are best, you know, essential oils. You can work a lot with children on aromatherapy. Lavender is a very soothing smell. If you find your child's agitated and hyper, spraying, just putting a little, you get a spritzer and put a little lavender in the water and spritz it, it does calm them. If your child's agitated at night, lavender is very effective. If they're slow to wake and a little crabby in the morning, orange essence, it's telling Gail today, it's an uplifting feeling. It makes you feel joy, just the smell itself. Rose is another really beneficial smell for children. It's a very spiritual smell. It really makes them feel calm and warm in the world. So aromatherapy is a good thing for children. Beware of stuffy, oxygen-deprived environments. I learned this from a healer when my husband was on his deathbed, and we moved in and lived with a healer for 6 weeks. And she taught us that every day, even in the dead of winter, to open up our house and let the fresh air in. It changes the ionization from positive to negative, negative being the positive one. I don't know why they did that. It's weird. Anyway, it has a very beneficial effect. And especially in today's modern houses, which are so airtight. Now we're trying to live green, but they're so airtight, they're not letting the air in that you need to breathe.